Football is life, and that's why we're here to talk to you about Ted Lasso. My name is Dan Morin, and I have assembled an amazing team of players this week. I'm walking them through their choreographer paces as we speak, and they're just swell, let me tell you. Joining me to discuss the latest episode of Ted Lasso, we have Annette Weirstra. Hi, Annette.
Hello, Dan. I'm really excited to take this choreography and then not never perform it.
That feels like a lot of my choreography goes that way. Hi, Kelly Gamont. How are you?
Okay, Greyhounds, let's get in formation.
And we also have Heather Barberette. Hi, Heather.
Hey, you know, just give me a minute. I'm trying to take care of my eyebrows that are not crazy, just psychotic.
We've all been there. We've all been there.
We have.
We are here to talk about season 2, episode 11, Midnight Train to Royston. We're going to do a quick overview, and then we'll dive in. We'll dig into this episode. It's kind of a big one. It's our penultimate episode of the season. Mm-hmm. All right. So we open on the Greyhounds' second to last game of the season as they are one win away from promotion back to the Premier League. Sam has scored a hat trick. And is kind of coasting on that. His sort of ongoing plot for this week involves a billionaire from Ghana, Edwin Okufu, who has shown up and wants to pay him to come join a team that he's starting in Africa in order to basically elevate it to like a top-level club. So it'll be in contention, and hopefully someday they can win the World Cup. And he takes him to a museum, and he takes him to a Nigerian restaurant, all these things that he's created on the spot. and Rebecca is dealing with the struggles of this and having to wonder whether or not her feelings for Sam are getting in the way. And she doesn't give him an answer by the end of the episode, but she tells him that she hopes he'll stay. Meanwhile, we also have an ongoing plot with Keely, who is getting a profile in Vanity Fair as a woman on the rise. And she's very excited and very nervous about that. And Roy is supposed to do a photo shoot with her. She ends up taking Nate suit shopping, and awkwardly, he tries to kiss her, which leads to some some strange interactions there. Roy, meanwhile, has gone to Phoebe's school, and he finds that there's an art show going on, and he ends up having a lengthy conversation with Ms. Bowen, her teacher, and doesn't tell her basically about Keely when she asks if he's married or not. And they end up having a moment during the photo shoot on the couch where they confess these various things to one another, that Nate tried to kiss Keely and that Roy was spending time with the teacher. And then Keely also tells Roy that that Jamie told her at the funeral that he was still in love with her. So a lot to end on there. Finally, Ted is dealing with Dr. Sharon's last day. And finds out that she has left early and not said goodbye and instead left him a letter. He gets very upset about her abandoning him and goes to confront her, at which point they have a nice back and forth, and he ends up reading the letter, and then all is forgiven, and they decide to go out for drinks, at which point he eventually decides instead to leave a note for her on the way out, which is very cute. And then finally, at the end of the episode, we discover that Trent Crim, the Independent, has written a piece in the Independent saying that, revealing that Ted had a panic attack during the game earlier this season, and he tells Ted that his anonymous source was Nate. There's a few little things in there as well, but I'm sure we'll jump into them. I actually want to start off talking about one thing that I thought was very interesting. I paged back through all the episodes this season and noticed they're all much longer than last season's. We have veered from a show that started out as basically a half-hour comedy and is solidly in the 45-minute range in most episodes now. Mm-hmm. And I think as a result has also tilted more from a comedy with some drama to a drama with some comedy. And I wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
I've appreciated it. One of the things, there were a couple of times in the first season where it felt like, I just need another 5 minutes in this one to really get an opportunity to see where we are or how that played out or, you know, that sort of thing. And so I really like that it's gotten a bit longer, and I've appreciated getting to spend a little bit more time with everybody, because it doesn't feel like filler and it doesn't feel like I think it's something probably you and I, Dan, have talked about on some podcasts at some point, was like Netflix syndrome, where like you get to the end of the season and you look back and you go, yeah, we could have cut a couple of those episodes entirely and been fine. And I feel like we're still nicely paced. I think we're getting, you know, obviously a little bit more plot in each episode. And so we've gotten sort of more story advancement this season than we did in season one, but I'm appreciating it. And I'm liking that they're taking the opportunity, not being limited by broadcast television parameters, to give us as much story as we need to get in each episode.
I think it's also working because it's such an ensemble story where I don't feel like there are key characters, but I'm not feeling like this is Ted Lasso's story. And having that time to tell the story of all of these characters that I really care about, having that extra time really works. And perhaps because it is even more of an I think it always was ensemble, but I think even more so this season, that you have that time to tell all of those stories, and that's really good.
Mm-hmm. I'm also really appreciating how much depth of character we're getting. I mean, these are really deep, rich character arcs, right? That I think is, you know, your traditional comedies don't really even try to take a bite out of. But, you know, Ted's dealing with some pretty significant mental illness around his panic attacks, and Hannah's kind of found the love of her life, but there's a huge age difference and he has this amazing opportunity. And Keely and Roy are struggling with, I think, very real life couple stuff. And so I just appreciate that it's still a feel good place most of the time. I mean, Nate, it's challenging, but I'm assuming Nate is supposed to be challenging. So, so okay. But to have some just really richness of real life struggles is amazing. So I also appreciate the length, because I think that's what's allowing us to get deeper into these people. We're getting to see much more of real people because we have more time to explore it. So, and I started checking the time when I start an episode. Like, yes, 47 or 47 minutes. That's awesome. Yes. Yeah.
It's funny. In some ways, I really love the drama this season, and I think in some cases the comedy, some of the comedy bits have felt more extraneous. Like, there's like a 30-second gag in here about like the crotch in Nate's suit that I thought was like, honestly, I would have cut that. I don't think it's really that important. Like, I'm so much more into the character stuff that some of the comedy stuff for me is like, oh, wait, hold on. I forgot this is supposed to be a comedy. I was like involved in like the drama and like the character interaction. So it's interesting,
Dan,
to see that change.
I think that scene is actually super important.
Okay, yeah.
Because they're putting a lot of attention on a place that Nate feels vulnerable. And he's kind of asking for it, right? So I think that scene, yes, was it? I probably could have been funnier, but I think it's pretty significant. My guess is, in terms of Nate's little foreshadowing of where Nate's going, what he's asking for, and how it feels to actually be under the spotlight and have everyone staring at him.
Yeah,
because he wants all the attention, right?
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk a little more about Nate, because I do think, I agree with all of you that I think that's the most sort of challenging storyline, and intentionally so. I think in some cases it's been at times a little uneven this season, because he kind of vacillates between being, you know, somebody you're rooting for and then somebody you're, you know, a lot of times deeply uncomfortable with. So, and in particular, I think that last shot of him in the dressing room where he spits on the mirror, which we've seen him do in a previous episode, but the context felt different here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it did hit different. And I think part of my frustration with Nate, like we talked about earlier this season, is that we care about him after the first season. Like, we care about Nate. His arc was interesting. He got promoted. Everybody likes him now instead of picks on him, and how all of that has turned around for him. Like, for him being in the locker room at the end of season two is very different than it is at the end of season one. And part of the reason that it's so frustrating and aggravating to watch him be a complete douche canoe to other people is because we like him. And we care about him, and we want him to succeed and be happy, and we can tell he's not. And it's hard to watch him work through that himself. And like, when that happens in life, sometimes like you have friends or whatever, and maybe they're going through something that you can't help them with, and you just sort of have to wait it out. Or, you know, somebody that's like a lot younger than you, and you're like, yeah, I did all this already. Let's just skip to the end. And you kind of have to wait for them to work it out themselves. And it's hard to sit and watch that, especially when you know, like, there's going to be fallout. There's stuff that's going to happen. And that's the part that is hard to watch with Nate, I think.
I think, though, I also have a pretty great, like, I have a great deal of faith in the writers of the show and the character of how they've created him and how they're going to bring this, because you can tell we're coming to a head.
Yes.
And something's gonna, like, he's got to face some consequences of what he's done. And yet I think that they will resolve it in a way where lessons are learned, character is developed, something mm-hmm. important is said about his drive and ambition, and when ambition starts overtaking, because I think in terms of that conversation with Keely, ambition is not a bad thing. Like, you mm-hmm. do want to have drive, you want to have goals, you want to achieve, but what he's doing is starting to step on people, and some of those people are people who have been supporters and helped him get where mm-hmm. he is. Like, that is, I think, what's going to sort of come to a head and face consequences. I don't know if they'll be able to resolve it by the end of the season, or if that's something that will carry forward, but I'm curious, and I don't really like it because I just want him to be really nice guy. But at the same time, yeah. I think they're going to do something with it. I hope that will be powerful and interesting.
Well, we know there's a third season, so I'm pretty sure that the fallout from this is going to ripple into further episodes. Yeah. I don't think it's going to get a bow on it in the next 45 minutes, because we get one more episode of the season and that's that.
Well, and they've set up a conflict, direct conflict between Ted and Nate right now. Yep. I mean, that was kind of the last note. And it's interesting because Nate is acting like his dad, right? They did a good job that whole, the kind of the Nate episode where we got to see him struggle with his father, who's really just a dick, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you can see where Nate's wound comes from and where his belief that you're either at the bottom or the top and there's no, you know, like Coach said, there's no collaborative forest in Nate's world, right? There's one or the other. And so it makes sense that in an attempt to recover or have some self-esteem and self-respect, the only thing he knows is to go to the top. So in that way, I find it believable too. It just, like, I think, was it Kelly who was talking about how much we like him? And so how painful it is to see him do this. Yeah, I think that's right on the money. I mean, you just rooted for him so much. And now you know.
I was just going to say, one thing I caught in my rewatch of this episode was the scene where they're doing the choreography for the NSYNC dance. He is standing to the side and he's like checking, he checks his watch and he looks like very like, you can read the body languages. Why are we doing this? Right? Like, why are we wasting our time on this when there's football to do? Right? Like, and he's got that. He's got the scene where he's really upset that like Ted's going to take the credit for his.
Mm-hmm.
His idea, which is weird, right? Because, you know, Beard and Roy point out, like, that's how this works, right? Like, we're all a team and he's the head coach and he's going to take credit. But at the same time, Ted doesn't, I think, strike anybody as someone who's going out there being like, I came up with this brilliant idea. I don't even know what it is.
And if you go forward and back at the same time, one of the first things Ted told Trent Krim, the Independent, is this play that we just did where Jamie is the fake out came from the Kit Man.
Mm-hmm.
Nate the Great gave us that play. Like, the first thing he did was give Nate credit for it. And that's something you said is very interesting to me, because I didn't think about it like that. You were talking about ambition and goals. And I think Nate's goal is not necessarily like success. I think his goal is credit. Like, what he wants is to get credit for everything. I don't know if he necessarily wants to run it all. I think he just wants to make sure that everyone falls all over themselves, because he got like a little hit of that.
Yeah, that Twitter, the Twitter scrolling, Wonder Kid, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah,
which was also,
we
all know that was patently false, but that's a separate story, because it was just a page after page of wonderful things that somebody was saying about somebody. Like, sweetie, you must be new here. Yeah, that was definitely pretend and by far the most fictional thing I think we've seen on Ted Lasso so far. But like, I think the credit piece of it, and the part where like he gets credit for the things that he's done, even though we know that like the first thing he did was say like, yeah, we got an idea from the Kit Man. And that's where it came from. You know, Nate gave it to us and it was a good idea and we're going to try it out. And so like, I've been sort of, we've seen the Nate Ted showdown coming all season when Beard pulls him aside and calls him out right before he evaporates from Nate's office and says, and the first thing Nate wants to know is, did you tell Ted? Because that's the thing that worries him the most, is like whatever Ted is going to think of him. And so then for him to turn around and tell Trent Crim, the Independent, what he told him is baffling to me. And like part of what I wanted to know is if this has anything to do, because I have a lot of theories. You may know me from other podcasts where we do nothing but theorize about what's going to happen next. I want to know what Rupert whispered in Nate's ear at the funeral, because I know that's going to come back to us somehow. And I don't know if this is how that comes back or something else, because, you know, again, with the like effectiveness of the storytelling, like that wasn't a wasted moment. They didn't do that for no reason. There's a reason. And I don't know what that reason is yet.
I think we know. Yeah. Because here's what we've got. We've got Rupert whispering in Nate's ears. We've got Rupert buying a new team, and we've got Nate buying a high-end suit that he cannot afford.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think what we're seeing is he's going to take over this team. Yeah. They told us, didn't they? He gave Rebecca all the shares. And then what there was some scene with gossip about him buying a new team.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't there? Or was that some theory podcast that I got that from? I'm pretty sure that's in the show.
That seems very believable if it is, because of course Rupert would want to like take Rebecca down this way.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's his goal. I mean, he's not turned over a new leaf. Let's be clear.
I don't know if we've seen it or not, but there's no great leap of logic there. That would be another good reason for him to get rid of her shares.
Mm-hmm. I also wonder
if he can have his own team.
If Rupert's been whispering in Nate's ear, you know, our team is never going to be great if you don't take down Ted. Like,
oh, I think that's the latest in a series of times Rupert's whispered in Ted's ear, or in Nate's ear, to be sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense. There's an interesting link in here with the Keeley and Roy plot, as we went over in the overview. Nate tries to kiss Keeley and is, you know, there is an extreme moment of awkwardness there, which I think for the most part, Keeley handles really well. You know, Nate is immediately ashamed of what he did. But it also plays into the stuff that's going on with Keeley and Roy. I thought it was particularly interesting that when Keeley confesses the bit about Nate to Roy while they're on the couch, Roy is 100% understanding. He is not threatened at all, right? He is like, oh, that must have been really awkward, you know, thanks for telling me. And then contrast that with when he, you know, Keeley says, Jamie confessed that he still loves me. And that takes him down a peg, right? Because Jamie, even though they have, you know, maybe buried the hatchet slightly, he knows that Jamie is still kind of a threat there.
Yeah. Well, and Keeley took it a little bit. Keeley didn't take it nearly as well when Roy made his confession of like, I talked to Phoebe's teacher for like 3 hours and she asked if I was married. And I just said, no, I didn't say anything about you. And I don't know why. But she like, it seems like she really feels uncomfortable with that. Like, she wasn't quite sure what to say and just kind of sat with it for a minute, but she didn't give him back like, thank you for telling me, or, you know, anything like that. And like Roy, it was sweet to me that like Roy immediately is empathetic with her. Right. And he goes, that must have been awkward, and like immediately puts himself in her. She's like, I can see where this would be weird. You know, this is going to mess up like the friendship you have or whatever. And so like that moment was weird. And then I just felt sort of extra mad for Roy at the end of that, because remember, Roy was the one that went over and hugged Jamie after his dad showed up in the locker room and everything. And like, Roy was the one to reach out to him after all that, was the only one that could like take action and go stand over there and like be Jamie's friend for a minute. And I think he feels a little bit like, you know, I tried to like
not just
reach
friend
out to
either,
you a
right?
little bit, like, and like, this is how you treat me?
Kind of like a pseudo father figure, right? Not just a friend there in that moment.
Yeah, but trying to be helpful to him and reach out to him in a meaningful way that we know like exactly how far that bridge had to be built, right? And so like, I feel like this felt like a little slap in the face, so to speak, to Roy, and I think that's part of what rattled him about it more. Even like, you know, bonus aggravation in it. So,
but those 2 second confessions are a bigger deal, because Keeley and Nate, it's not going to happen.
Right.
the teacher and Droy, they have chemistry. There's connection there. Whether either of them act on it is completely different. So I think it is important that he confesses that and puts it out there, because I think keeping a secret would be more concerning. So that's a vulnerable confession, but so yep. is the Jamie one. So both of those have potential to turn into real problems, real attractions, real issues. So, you know, they both that picture, like, are you going to put that picture in the magazine with both of them sitting like sort of shocked, stony faces?
Yeah.
You know, like that something big just happened and we don't know what is going to happen next. So
yeah.
that was pretty powerful. Also the fact, like the looking in the eyes part, like when you look in someone's eyes like that and talk mm-hmm. to them, looking in their eyes is really powerful, and they're like gazing at each other. So I feel like they can survive this, but that was still a really big relationship moment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think this is some of, it's just the writing on the show is so deep. So if I speak as a psychologist for just a sec, you know, there's a period in all normal relationships where all of that frenetic fall in love, can't keep your hands off of each other stuff dies. Like it has to, otherwise we never get out of bed and we'd all starve and, you know, and be diseased. So, you know, it has to fall off. And then you kind of move into bring, you know, back to kind of living more of a full, life with other things that are also important in addition to the relationship. But most cultures don't support that in terms of cultural understanding or knowledge. So people often like freak out when suddenly, you know, they can think of something other than their lover for 5 minutes a day, you know, mm-hmm, and people mm-hmm. tend to interpret that as meaning something's wrong or something's bad or we're not in love anymore, or chemistry's gone, when really it's just totally normal. Like it's just totally normal stuff. And what I'm hoping is that Keeley and Roy are having that moment of, oh, things are a little different, aren't they? I have space in my life for other things. And it's not unusual for people to go looking for that, that highly charged eroticism somewhere else because they think something is wrong. And plus it feels great. Like who doesn't like to fall in love, you know? So I'm hoping that they're kind of facing a really normal relationship moment and that they work through it because that would be just so supportive of good relationship education. I want it so bad.
I think that's the pattern we've seen with them, right? I think the scene directly before that where she's nervous about doing the interview and the photo shoot, and he comes over and's like, look, you're amazing, right? Like that's a great moment and shows, as with earlier in the season where we see that the whole episode where he's basically around all the time and she's getting annoyed because he's always there.
Yes.
And he eventually realizes what he's done and is like takes moves to correct that. I think that all shows us what kind of relationship these two have. So I agree. I mm-hmm. think they will work through this issue and that it's a totally normal thing. And especially for two people who are like, it's a, you know, a handsome footballer and a very attractive former model, right? Like, you know, you feel like these are idealized almost versions, but we're seeing like a very real version. They're still people like everybody else, and they have to deal with the same struggles as anybody else does in a relationship. So I have to admit, I thought after the question about him being married, that was going to prompt him to maybe propose. And I still don't think it's out of the question for the end of the year, but I also think Ted Lasso often resists convention in that way. In that it will move forward, but maybe not exactly in the way we expect.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I also really appreciated the little moment there between them when he's like, you're Keeley Jones, independent woman, which called back to season one, which the bit that was one of my favorite parts of season one was like the little pretend press conference. I loved it. So, yeah.
Speaking of relationships, let's talk a little bit about Sam and Rebecca and about the stuff that Sam especially is going through in this episode. I loved that Sam gets his own song at the beginning, a la Jamie
but
Tart.
But it's lame.
So is Jamie Tart. Like,
well, Jamie at least is like a riff on something that like exists and is catchy, and like the and Sam's is just they just sort of shout his name a bunch, and I was like, you can't give Sam a better song? Like, really?
I liked it. I thought it was
good.
But
that's sort of like a typical
I'm glad he got one.
Chant, right? They don't always make sense. It's just there's a pattern.
Yeah.
He's got a nice rhythm to his name, too, which helps,
yes,
right?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
So
I felt bad for him that he didn't get like a song. So I'm like, Roy's got a song, Jamie's got a song, you know, and
Jamie's
Sam just gets
is
Sam Obasanya.
Baby Shark. How good is that though?
Yeah,
it's not that good.
So Sam has a big decision in front of him, and his relationship or lack thereof with Rebecca seems likely to play into that somehow. This is several weeks, at least, it seems like, after the last episode, at least a few.
Yeah.
His relationship with Rebecca is still in limbo, which, as Ted points out, great party game, terrible relationship status. And so I'm curious to know what you think about where Sam and Rebecca are headed and how Sam's offer from Edwin Akufu is going to play into that.
I feel like it's irresistible for Sam. Because he said, I don't just want the footballer. I don't just want Sam the footballer. I want Sam the man as well. And I feel like that, like, if anyone was ever going to be able to woo Sam away from Richmond, that's the phrase that pays.
Like, also, what he's proposing is important. Mm-hmm. It's symbolic. And, like, as much as I think Rebecca and Sam are very cute, he's very young. He has a lot ahead of him, and the potential for him to make substantive change through this offer. I'm like, oh, Sam, Rebecca is awesome, but also this, go do this thing. It's
Well, and this seems like it's the first sort of big serious relationship he's had. And like, for most people, that's generally, feel free to jump in anytime, Dr. Berberit, on my assessment here, but for the most part, like, people have a first big love and get their heart smashed into a billion pieces and then pick up and move on and go figure out, like, this is what I actually want out of a relationship, and go, like, have
a
better
a relationship
one later
it's
on
in it's in limbo, so she hasn't even committed to him,
right?
So
right. But like, they had a thing, and like, even if it ends, right, like, that's still like the first, it seems like the first time he's had like anything that was more serious than, like, you know, let's go on a few dates and have some fun and that's that. So it sort of seems like maybe he gets that, and then like, this is a nice thing that I had while I was in Richmond, and now I'm going on to change the world or whatever it is he's going to do with his new billionaire buddy
who doesn't believe in billionaires,
who but also he was really fun to watch. Like, I enjoyed his character. Like, he was fun to, like, sort of get to know a little bit through the episode. Edwin, is that his name?
Yep, Edwin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed some of his bits, although I think my favorite bit of his in the entire episode is there are still some moments of utter absurdity in this show, which is what makes it hard to take serious as a drama sometimes. The encounter with Banksy is hilarious.
That's what you're gonna say.
It was very
congratulations
funny.
It you makes both just met a cool person.
It makes
I
absolutely zero sense. Similarly, I thought Higgins' story about his play is just one of the weirdest asides in an episode of the show at all. Like,
and then when Keely says, "I wish I could write fiction," I'm in goddess.
Yes,
and Rebecca's face at that point.
Yeah,
I'm
trying
not
to take it personally.
She has no idea what's happening. Yeah. Oh man, she was. For a minute, it felt like, is he just sort of channeling his inner Beard to try and say something funny here? Because like, I could totally see that coming out of Beard's mouth. It just felt weird to come out of Higgy Stardust.
Yeah, that's a little strange.
You know, I find Sam and Rebecca's storyline a little predictable. I mean, it was kind of inevitable. I think that, we knew something was going to get between them, right? Because Rebecca thought she had the opportunity to make a choice, and clearly we have to take that away from her. What I really appreciated about that was, you know, the show keeps doing kind of racial commentary in a pretty, sometimes really direct and also subtle way. And I just love seeing a black man flying with the helicopter with all of his Secret Service and kind of having this incredibly amazing vision. And there's just so much, I think, that came out in the way that they presented Akufu and how just the power he had and what he wanted to do with that power and how he related to the white folk. And I just really appreciated that a lot. And I hope he gets his vision. Like, I love the idea of what he wants to do. And I just thought that was a very cool thing that we don't get to see often enough. So that was my take on that.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's an interesting dynamic to have the African billionaire, right? Like, come in when you expect, in like a tech billionaire, especially, right? We predominantly think of tech billionaire as like old white guy, right? And it sort of shakes
because
that
because they predominantly are. Yeah, so it's absolutely. Nice in to our see world, one certainly. Who is not in the midst of building a rocket to go to space. So yeah, that was fun too. Yeah, I have to say a tiny side note on the whole Sam Rebecca thing. I had enjoyed again a scene that rhymes, where with season one where Rebecca bursts into Ted's office and unloads on him some new thing, and I liked that they all admitted it. And he was like, "I can't wait for next year." But also, I had a really. See, now I'm hung up on Ted. Like, everybody has a flaw, and Ted's flaw is not his panic attacks. It's that he thinks Sam and Rebecca were the best couple on Cheers, and I had a really hard time with that. And, like,
really?
I had
you
to
please
pause.
Don't tell me Sam and Diane, because that's not... No, come on.
No, it was Sam and Coach. I mean, if we're going to get down to it, they had the kindest, most stable relationship on that entire show. And I watched a lot of Cheers. I was a child of a certain age. Like, I had to pause and shout for a minute about how unbelievably wrong that is. And it's okay because everybody has a flaw and I understand that. And it's fine that Ted is utterly and completely wrong about Sam and Rebecca being the best. So that's okay. And like, we can hit play now. And I had to get back to it. But like, that was a thing that I was a little bit hung up on because it's clearly incorrect. So I just wanted to make sure please let me know if I'm the only person who thinks this, because I never thought they were any fun together. And so that was like, so I was like, why do you think they are the best? Like, maybe he was just using it for comedic effect.
Well, they're hanging a lantern on the fact that they had the Sam and Rebecca thing going, clearly, it seems to me. So I thought it was more of a tip of the hat than anything.
I'm hoping that's what it is, and that maybe we'll find out what Ted's actual personality flaw is later. Because yeah, I was.
Oh, I think we know it. Ted's personality flaw. We've seen him investigate that all season. Speaking of which, should we talk a little bit about Ted and Sharon? This is it's interesting. I can't remember which of you mentioned the ensemble nature of this earlier, and talking about like it's not just a show about Ted Lasso anymore. And in fact, Ted, though he has a good storyline this episode, feels like he's in the back seat for a lot of it as compared to some of the other plot lines that are going on. But I really think his interactions with Sharon in this episode are some of my favorite. I have grown to love those two as a character dynamic and think they're really fantastic. So I'm kind of sad to see her go. But I thought as send-offs went, that was pretty great.
I'm super bummed to see her go. I feel like as a character, she got about season one treatment in terms of her complexity and what we got to know about her. And I was really hoping she was kind of, I know that they kept telling us because she was in like corporate housing and whatever that she wasn't going to stay, but I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that she comes back for season two and that she gets the same kind of deeper dive into her character that we got for everybody else this season. So I'm sad to see her go, but I do think the whole letter scene was great, and I'm dying to read that letter, and I know why they did it. They didn't have to write the letter, but I want to read the letter. What did she say to him that made him turn into butter? Like, that's what I want to know.
Yeah. One of the things I like about her relationship with all the characters is that there is a bit of a closed door on her therapy with them. So not being able to read the letter sort of fell in with that, because it's like they all will come out of her office and be like, that was amazing. And it just feels like, yeah, you know what? We don't need to be privy to everybody's therapy and psychology. And I'd kind of like that. Also, she gets to be amazing because we don't know exactly what she's doing. And so I think it would be really hard to have her consistently be magical on screen all the time. And yeah, so that felt like that. And I didn't care that I didn't get to see the letter. So
yeah, I just wanted to know like what really nice thing she had put in it that like took the edge off Ted. Like I just wanted to know what it was that she was highlighting there. I really enjoy them, but I feel like she kind of fits in the beard category for me on this show, where like I want a bunch more of her, but I also kind of don't, because part of what I like about her now is that closed door situation. Like, we never saw her therapy with anybody else. All we saw was the fallout or the aftermath of it, right? Like, we saw Colin chanting his mantra to himself when he was having a rough time. And, you know, we saw a couple times people came out of her office and said she was great or something, but we never saw anyone in that office with her except for Ted. And so the dynamic between the two of them, I very much appreciated, like, them both enjoying pinball and, you know, we got you an envelope full of cash and all right, you know, and like he calls her Dr. Moneybags and she doesn't flinch at it or anything. And yeah, I really liked the two of them together. So like I did sort of wonder what's her emergency, because I kind of hope that maybe they will bring her back and mm-hmm. maybe the fallout from this article will... the article we see at the end of the episode, maybe that will help bring her back. Maybe Ted will invite her back to come to continue at least with him or something. And we'll still get to see her. I would really like to see more of her next season.
I think that like this article coming, it's like she's gone and he doesn't have probably the person who could best help him address that.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen?
It is interesting. I mean, I think as far as the team goes, like the team that we see now is so different from the team that we saw in the first episode when they first started talking about bringing her in, that her mm-hmm. job as vis-a-vis the team itself has been done, right? She has accomplished what she went there to do. And so I can see her function in that case being sort of like, all right, you know, she has completed her arc. But I agree that Ted is still struggling. And the next episode will kind of tell us how well he has, you know, moved on or like grown as per his therapy with Sharon in terms of how he's able to sort of handle the fallout from it. I like that there's still sort of an intrinsic amount of like he sort of turns around her thing, leaving her the letter at the end, and he leaves her the army man in the drink, showing that like he's kind of... you know, still got his core of being there, right? Like he's still got his way of doing things, which is a nice way of saying like he both sort of took and incorporated what he learned from her into his own outlook, right? He didn't totally supplant his worldview with hers, mm-hmm. but he melded them.
Like she did, which she pointed out to him. Mm-hmm. Like, I was awesome before and you made me even better. And I appreciate that. And I really liked that moment between them when she told him that.
Yeah, that was a great scene. What else? Is there anything else you guys wanted to particularly bring up in this episode? Any thoughts?
We haven't talked about the dance.
The dance.
I'm still a little mad that we didn't get to see it.
I really wanted to see it full on. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's so good. And Jamie's just like fully and deeply, profoundly committed to the dance. I mean, I could just watch him do it over and over and over again. It's so good.
Basically all the
time. And then he's so excited when he's done.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was great. It has a couple of the best stealth jokes in it, right? Because the lead up into it is Beard complaining to Ted, like, these guys are just not in sync.
Not in sync. Yeah. You got this? If it's got to be me?
Yep.
Oh my God,
I didn't get that till you just said that now. Yep. I'm just like, too old.
Beard always slides in with the unbelievably clever nod on something like that, and it just, like... I think that was another moment where I had to pause because I was like, I'm not done laughing at this yet and I don't want to miss anything else.
You know, I wonder if Beard ever says anything that doesn't have at least two meanings at the same time. Like, that would be interesting because he doesn't say a lot. So you could probably go through the whole season and just do his lines except for his episode. But he didn't talk a lot in his episode either. And I bet a large chunk of his lines have at least two meanings, if not more.
The beardism in this episode where he talks about the sunlight and the trees in the forest is particularly great because Nate immediately asks, trees. Like, why can't you just give me a straight answer? And Roy is like, yeah, he just did. You know, like, you just are not listening, right? You're not paying attention. Yeah.
One of my favorite things is to track what books they're all reading, right? Because there's a book in almost, and so this one is Entangled Life, which is, of course, about this way that plants have to communicate that we're totally oblivious to. So it's great.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a good bit.
I just appreciated that was like the most direct I think we've seen Beard be in a while. And so even when he's being very pointed, like Nate was still completely missing it. So I did like that Roy pointed out, you know, like that was pretty straightforward.
I also think there are lots of signifiers that Beard knows what's up with Nate much more than, because just the way he looks, he sees the way he's treating the new Kit guy. And he did call him out that one time, but I think he's watching and seeing and understands that Nate is going through something, and it's, and that Nate is not being kind to those around him.
Well, yeah, it's a particularly interesting bit there too in this episode, right? Because he returns to dry cleaning and said, like, here's, you know, here's Ted's suit for you, right? And he's like, no, yeah, it's my suit, right? And obviously, I think at this point, Nate is already probably feeling some guilt about betraying Ted's confidence. And the idea of him wearing a suit given to him by Ted is uncomfortable. And that's part of the reason I think that also prompts him to decide to go get a new suit, is this, he does not want to have that sort of as the, mm-hmm. the figurative albatross around his neck of like, oh God, he was nice to me and he, you know, did me a favor and I stabbed him in the back.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of this, a lot of Nate's bad decisions come from Nate wrestling with himself and like mm-hmm. him kicking his own butt over how he treated Ted or maybe how he treated Colin and things like that. And I think like we kind of all have that though, right? Like nobody, nothing anyone else can say to us can make us feel any worse than anything we're already doing in our own heads when we feel bad about something already. And I feel like that's where a lot of Nate's fallout is coming, is he's just really terrible at dealing with it.
So new thought, I wonder if when he spits at himself in the mirror, I was thinking that was just about kissing Keely, but maybe the spitting is also about betraying Ted. That hadn't occurred to me
yeah.
before.
Yeah. I think it's self-loathing. It feels very much like he yeah. really dislikes himself. I mean, that's a powerful move, right?
It's his power move, though. So like he has been spitting and then like amping himself up. So I thought my interpretation was that after the humiliation with Keely, he's like spits and tries to take power back by bringing down Ted. So I interpreted like that was the moment. What he did after that was pick up the phone and call Trent. And that was a reaction to his humiliation. So
possible.
That's,
I took the flip side.
That's
where
how I took it. So
I took the flip side is earlier in the season when he saw him do that and then walk out and be assertive was him basically saying like, you're crap to himself. You've got to be a better person. You've got to be like more tough or something. And I think at this point it sort of flips to he still doesn't think very much of himself. I mean, he's crying in that scene too. You see there's a tear that goes down his cheek before he spits mm-hmm. on his image. And it felt very powerful in that moment.
I felt like it did shift in those moments. Like the first one was like his version of Rebecca's I make myself big. Mm-hmm. And like he decided like that's what she does when she has to pump herself up to go into a room of people. And I felt like that was him taking that power move in the bathroom at the restaurant to get the better table. Mm-hmm. But like this time, because of the tear first, it felt like he was like mad at himself. And like he like it came out weird maybe the first time as like his power moved in, you know, his own make himself big. And then this time, like it was him being upset with himself. And then I like the idea that like he went home and called Trent Crim the Independent and they had a little chat.
You know, the music is really different in those two scenes too. I might have to go back and mm-hmm. look, but it different has a very, a really painful feel the second time. And the first time it has a much more like, you know, empowering feel. So I can see both of these. I think it'll be interesting to see how this plays out next week. Cause I could see both of those paths for Nate. So, very interesting.
Well, just the fact that he's spitting as a power move or a guilt move or whatever. Yeah. It's just a weird choice of action. Like, I don't know. It's aggressive, but also gross.
Connotes disgust too, right? Like, that's what's interesting about it, is even if he's building himself up by sort of degrading himself, you know, which is certainly a thing. Like, it feels uncomfortable even in the moment where he uses it to a quote unquote positive effect.
Well, we spit to show contempt, right? So mm-hmm. clearly, mm-hmm. Nate really struggles with his own sense of being contemptuous, disgusting, mm-hmm. the bottom of the barrel, bubblegum on the bottom of our shoe, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why he's so aggressive now, because those feelings are pretty powerful. So the opposite side is also really powerful.
Yeah.
But I hope he resolves it, because he's a nice guy underneath all of that mm-hmm. trauma.
Yep. The only other thing I had on my list was the, again, in list, things of, comic bits that I felt like maybe you didn't need. Colin still can't drive his car, as alluded to in a previous episode, which is a funny bit, but at the same time, it's like, why is this here? In an episode that we have so much to talk about, there's just this weird, like, extended sequence where you, like, can't. Yeah, it's very, very strange. Anything else jump out at people, or shall we wrap up?
I think we're gonna.
This definitely felt like a building episode, right? Mm-hmm, like, kind of really setting the stage for what's to come next, getting everything teed off. And so, in that way, there was movement, but, you know, absolutely no resolution, which is not particularly satisfying. So I would say that while I think it was probably really well written and done, as always, it won't be my favorite episode because there's just no satisfaction. It's just everything is on edge. Everything's open. Everything's ready to go. And nothing's, you know, really happened yet. So,
yeah,
we're holding our breath to next week because that's right. You know, there's going to be like poof about some things.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think it's a setting up episode, and you know, if you're watching this in a binge later on, I'm sure it continues the tension and building, and then you get the resolution, but we all have to wait a week. So
yes,
such are the problems of being an early adopter. All right. Well,
poor
in that
us.
Case, poor us, we're really
we're
suffering. We're all suffering.
God,
life is hard.
You in the future, you have it so easy. You have no idea what it was like to watch it week to week. It was uphill both ways. It was snowing every time.
Every time.
All you people in late 2021 and 2022 with Elon Musk's jetpacks already working. I know. It's a hard time.
All you people in offices wearing pants. Going out to dinner and movies. You don't know what it was like.
All right. Well, let us wrap up. I would like to thank my panel this week. Annette Wierster, thank you so much for being here.
I am very glad to be here, and I am currently doing the choreography.
Kelly Gamont, always a pleasure.
Son of a bitch stole my move.
And Heather Berberet, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Dan. Appreciate ya.
And thank you everybody out there for listening. We'll have another episode of Football Is Life next week to wrap up the season, and I believe there will be a season sort of as a whole wrap up on the incomparable Mothership, so keep your eyes tuned for that. And keep your eyes tuned. What a fabulous turn of phrase I've invented there.
Just smush your eyes and your ears together and we're all good to go.
There you go. Thanks so much for listening, and remember, football is life.